We present Capital Gains by Colin Johnson, with Peter Jones as Julius Hutch. Episode 3, Venture Capital.
Rose-fingered dawn lights the wine-dark sea. Aphrodite's town is the place to be.
Rose-fingered dawn lights the wine-dark sea. Aphrodite's town is the place to be. What?
From Peter Fang to the Board of Governors, the Bank of Hong Kong and the Islands. Progress report. Esteemed governors, there is a strange tradition in Britain at Christmas. It is called pantomime. In theatres all over the country, women pretend to be boys, and men pretend to be women. I am convinced that Julius Hutch is laughing at our revered bank by appearing as Dame Dingle in the West End of London. Tomorrow night, I and my staff of top operatives will dress in women's clothing so as not to be noticed. When I give the signal, we will stand up and throw custard pies at the stage, shouting, "Reveal yourself!" And Julius Hutch will be exposed.
Dear Julius, had a visit from an enchanting lady who works in a bank, a certain Mrs. P. Tone. She was seeking clarification on the implications of your last to her, the one where you promised to clear her mortgage and all other debts. Naturally, seeing that she was a friend of yours, I took the trouble to explain that if, hypothetically, and I stress that word, if, hypothetically, someone, such as possibly yourself, had come to be in possession of a rather large sum of money that certain other parties, such as in this hypothetical case a certain Far Eastern bank, might have some sort of tenuous hypothetical claim upon, and if this imaginary person had taken it upon themselves to go gallivanting around the place, scattering the used notes like so much seed upon a ploughed field, I think she caught my meaning, for she quickly understood that any possible beneficiaries of this hypothetical redistribution of wealth could, were they aware of the origin of this hypothetical money, be considered to be in receipt of stolen goods. A detail, but worth mentioning, I thought. Mrs. Tone did inquire as to your whereabouts. And there, of course, I was unable to be of service. That you continue to exist at all, I deduced from the fact that following your singular postal requirements results in correspondence. Beyond that, I know nothing. Regards, Sexton.
Dear Julius, I trust all is well with you. We hear of you variously at the bank. You have been reported to be living in the foothills of the Himalayas, the rainforests of South America, the South Pole, and other exotic parts like that. The truth is, Julius, no one knows where you are or what has become of you. As a matter of interest, I am able to tell you that the Bank of Hong Kong and the Islands is still keen to make contact with you in order to discuss a certain matter, and I happen to know this because last month I was taken to dinner by a gentleman by the name of Mr. Fang. As you may recall, he was a senior divisional executive with the Bank of Hong Kong and the Islands at the time of your windfall. He is still with that same bank, although I understand that his job title is now junior divisional executive. Peter Fang struck me as a rather driven sort, if you know what I mean, and he does seem to have taken it all rather personally. I mean, as you yourself pointed out, it's not as if the £4,601,740.72 was actually his. Mr. Fang was very keen to know if I had had any correspondence with you directly. I explained that you had written to me a few times, and that I, in the way of courtesy, had of course responded. But, I said, I expected he knew all that already. He acknowledged such was the case. He then asked me if I had experienced any change in my financial situation recently. I owned that indeed I had. on receipt of your last, I thought it might be sensible to consult a lawyer. Accordingly, I went to see a gentleman by the name of Sexton Lewis. Funnily enough, I believe you are also acquainted with him. Mr. Lewis explained that the contents of your last letter would be best understood as an example of wishful thinking. He said that it would even be possible to interpret your letter in the nature of a prophecy and remain within the law. After that, Mr. Lewis succumbed to an outburst of vigorous laughter and the meeting ended. Picture my surprise when I discovered that exactly as you had prophesied, all my debts had been paid off. Apparently, there is a company called Fair Shares, which is based, I believe, on an island in the South Pacific, which spends its time making just this kind of bequest. No one knows who funds the company or how, and it's all perfectly legal. How extraordinary! All I can say is, whoever is behind this company must be a remarkable person, and I think I should very much like to meet that person. I hope this story is clear. I think I've got most of the details right, but I'm not sure if Mr. Fang was able to follow it all. When at his request I gave this explanation, Mr. Fang, or poor dear Mr. Fang, as I can't help thinking of him, seemed to have the greatest difficulty swallowing his creme brulee. He uttered a sound that was all vowels, and then he tried to strangle himself, or maybe he was simply burying his face in his hands. I was a little taken aback. After all, creme brulee is a soft dessert. The evening ended shortly afterwards, and Mr. Fang, excuse me, poor dear Mr. Fang and I have made no plans to meet again. Incidentally, Julius, I wonder if I might ask your advice. I have accumulated several years' worth of holiday time from work, and I'm thinking about having a really special break. I know that by now you are a much-travelled man. Do you have any suggestions as to where I might go? I do hope you can find the time to give this matter some thought. My very warmest good wishes to you. Pauline.
Papal garden seems like home, except it's only found in Rome.
Papal garden seems like home, except it's only found in Rome. Uh-huh. Ah.
Pauline, my dear, how delightful to hear from you. I should like to assure you that my old friend Sexton Lewis has indeed interpreted my letters in quite the proper way. The subtlety of his methods, sometimes obscured by his expansive manner, has not been lost on me over the years. And I must say that should I ever be tested in a court of law, if ever it comes to that, then for me, Sexton is the advocate I should choose to put my case. You spoke in your letter of wanting to meet the, and I quote, remarkable person who is behind the philanthropic company Fair Shares. It goes without saying that I, of course, had no idea who this individual might be. But let me ask you a question. Suppose, just suppose there was a way for you to meet this person, and suppose further that upon meeting them you found little to remark on. Might it not then be a disappointment to actually meet? Perhaps this chap, if it is a chap, is a deeply ordinary man who's lived a deeply ordinary life and to whom perhaps one or two or maybe even a succession of extraordinary events occurred. Maybe this ordinary type is even now more than a little puzzled as to what the next step is, but is simply making as best a fist of it as he can. I feel a bit like that myself. These are just idle thoughts, though, and balanced against them I have a proposal to make. You need a holiday, and to tell you the truth, I could do with a change of scene myself. Might we not rendezvous in some enchanting spot? But here comes a problem, and it is a puzzle of the nicest difficulty that I'm sure it will take all our powers of ingenuity to solve it. As you point out, the Bank of Hong Kong and the Islands continues to be interested in my whereabouts. By the way, please do pass on my regards to the unhappy Mr. Fang. I'm dismayed to hear of his demotion. And I'm sure they will continue to monitor all of my incoming correspondence. I'm afraid that they will not scruple to invade your privacy in the same way. So, there we have it. How are we to arrange a private meeting with the eyes of the world upon everything we say to one another? Affectionately, Julius. If the Regent's wish had come to pass, we'd take our tea in Old Madras.
If the Regent's wish had come to pass, we'd take our tea in Old Madras. Well,
Dear Daddy, it was wonderful to see you again last month, and just as well that you used the runic signs to tell me the meeting place, for lately we have had several official-type visitors. At first we thought they'd cottoned on to your visits, but actually it's all about something else, which I'll come to in a moment. As you know, after our first harvest failed, we were all facing complete ruin, you as well. And then we had that inexplicable cash injection from Green Plan Unlimited, which apparently specialises in helping people who are trying to grow things, using organic methods. I hope you approve of what we've done with their funding. But now that the place is fixed up and we've had a magnificent harvest, I'm sending a few bottles of the Chardonnay for your approval. A real spanner has been thrown in the works. You remember how I told you that all the copper mining had finished here? Well, now it seems that deep beneath this little plot of land, there's even more copper. I don't know who discovered it first or how, but all kinds of people are interested in getting control of this land. We've been approached by several multinational companies, a couple of banks, and even the Australian government seems to be interested. So that explains all the comings and goings. The place looks so beautiful now. It really seems as if we're on the threshold of realizing a dream. It would wrench my heart to sell, and who knows what they'd do to it. As the major shareholder, the ultimate decision falls to you, Daddy. Thank goodness we can write to each other privately, now that we've been able to get the new system going. Let me know what you think. Heaps and heaps, Kate.
If one could park in NYC, what a dream town then, you see?
If one could park in NYC, what a dream town then, you see? Oh, yes, the Big Apple.
My darling Kate, thank you for yours of last week, which arrived safely, being conveyed by the redoubtable Sydney. He is a magnificent postman. I know that dolphins aren't really smiling, it's just that their mouths are shaped like that. But I'm sure he was pleased to see me, and I fed him the usual delicacies. Well now, interesting developments at your end. Question. Is the Bank of Hong Kong and the Islands amongst those interested in the vineyard? I've had occasion to acquaint myself with their doings, and I notice that they're keen to establish a presence in Australia. It may well turn out that they're just the people with whom we want to do business. You could put a few feelers out in that direction, and if possible, try to deal with Peter Fang. Say you've heard what an able chap he is, and so forth. My name needn't come into any of it, of course, and it might be as well to see to it that all my holdings are in fact registered under one of the various names I found it convenient to use just lately. You know that about a year ago I began giving away large amounts of cash to complete strangers? This has been a most enjoyable adventure, and it strikes me as a worthwhile project. It does, however, occur to me that this giving can continue only as long as there are funds to give. The principal has dwindled to a mere couple of million. I know now that I'm at a crossroads. I've resolved, therefore, to take action in the way of turning an already, from my former perspective, vast sum of money into an even vaster one. I seem to see myself becoming, by degrees, a parody of a character from the pages of some improbable bestseller set in the stock exchanges of the world. I shall rise early to take the financial papers. I shall wheel. I shall deal. Memos, directives, and faxes will become the stuff of life for me. Alarm calls throughout the night as each market opens and closes. And always, only one word shall be my maxim. Profit. As you know, the greater part of my adult life has been lived as one financially challenged. I'm keen to redress the balance. And I'm in a hurry. Wish me luck. As ever, your doting father, Julius.
Progress report from Peter Fang. Honored governors, at last Julius Hutch is within our grasp. He has been hiding with the holy men of Mount Athos in Greece. I have a photograph of him dressed as a monk. The disguise fools nobody. At dawn tomorrow morning, when the monastery is surrounded with crack agents from our beloved bank's security department, I will rip the false beard from his face, and Hutch will be ours.
Here is the financial news. In one of the quietest days trading since records began, merchant bankers have been expressing hopes that governments around the world will get some ideas to stimulate activity.
The British government has promised faithfully not to devalue the currency. It follows as a certainty, therefore, that devaluation is only a few hours away. Sell all British holdings immediately. There's money to be made here.
City News, and on the London Stock Exchange, trading was so vigorous that one leading analyst described it as the sort of activity usually only seen in fleas on heat.
Sell oil, buy tin. Move into lead. Sell copper, buy coffee. Take a position in pork bellies. Move into bonds, investigate tea. Sell sterling, dollars and marks, buy francs, pesetas and zlotys. Buy live hogs, sell nickel. Sell, buy, sell. The percentage return on this coordinated dealing will be spectacular.
Progress report from Peter Fang. Esteemed governors, I now have the true alias of Julius Hutch. He has been masquerading as a high-ranking Bedouin nomad and riding a camel. I have succeeded in gaining an invitation to the exclusive Feast of the Princes. It will give me great personal satisfaction to unveil Hutch by tearing from him the traditional headdress.
Dear Julius, the particular shares you're after do turn out to be available, in fact, but they are not going to be cheap. Still, if all falls out as you plan, I should think they're worth having at any price. What's next? World domination, perhaps? I understand that you're pretty fully occupied these days and will simply say that the Bowling Greens are bleak without you. Regards, Sexton.
Dear Sexton, your letter, which hints of life at a quieter pace and speaks of the blameless pleasures of the green, arrives in very good time indeed. It is as if everything I've ever experienced in my life before in the way of resentment, frustration, anger or envy is transformed within me to fashion a wide blade with which to carve a slice from the cake of the world's wealth. I've taken absurd risks with high stakes for huge returns, and each gamble has paid off. In short, I have lived in these demonic months a microcosm of the political and social processes that have created commercial man. And at last there's come a day when I have woken up rich. Not suddenly rich with a seven-figure number coming out of the blue, such a sum as might purchase a fraction of an acre in one of the world's capitals, but deeply and meaningfully and permanently rich with uncountable sums arising from many various sources and arriving daily in increasing intensity in my many various bank accounts. Rich beyond the wildest dreams of avarice. It is the bleakest day of my life. I'm staying in New York. Early this morning, I was walking along Fifth Avenue. I was munching a bagel Ahead of me, a man dressed in rags emerged from Central Park and made a beeline for me. As this man came towards me, I saw suddenly, beyond the outstretched hand and the meaningless inconvenience that the transaction of a few coins of loose change would make. I think he said, "Spare some change, buddy." I reached to my trouser pocket and pulled out all the coins I had, together with a few notes. "Why, thank you, sir," he said. "My dear chap," said I, "this won't do at all. Please take all I have." I took out my wallet and unsheathed the few $100 I had there and tried to thrust them into his hands. But the man wouldn't take them. He looked at me as though I were mad and ran off. I think I was a little mad at that moment. It was exactly as if I were emerging from a bad dream, the dream of my encounter with the dark face of the god of money. I am profoundly taken by the absurdity of it all, that I, Julius Hutch, a man who can no longer move, sleep, or drink a cup of tea under his own name, has now encountered someone whose very life I could buy and sell, perhaps have done so in my dark adventure of the gold. Someone with, to be sure, no asset about him save freedom, who is richer than I in the only sense that matters. The frenzy is over. Alas, it's not quite so simple as calling a halt to the whole business. I have responsibilities. I have an empire to run. I shall, however, take a holiday. And I know just the place to take it. Regards, old friend. Julius. Oslo, bright midnight town, midsummer's lights of high renown.
Oslo, bright midnight town, midsummer's lights of high renown. Oslo.
Good morning. Foreign news now. Early today, a man was found buried up to the neck in the middle of the Sahara Desert. When asked how he got there, he would only repeat over and over again.
Dear Julius, it was delightful to meet you after our long correspondence. I was very pleased to find you in such high spirits and in such excellent health as well, particularly after what you told me about the exertions you've been through in the last few years. It seems such a slight chance that I understood your messages, but when I received a gift-wrapped box containing 6 herring, I was rather puzzled. I was putting them in the fridge when I noticed that each of the 6 fish had a single red dot painted on its forehead, if fish have foreheads. And then after the first of your 6 postcards arrived, I began to understand. I did my best to play my part in the ruse. After your first, I booked a ticket to Athens, and subsequently, as was indicated, Rome, Madras, New York, a place that I have always wanted to visit, and finally Oslo, which was very nice too. What a wonderful series of excursions it was, especially as some thoughtful person had arranged limousines, first-class hotels and restaurants, and leisurely sightseeing with informed guides. Do you know, it may be my imagination, but I'm sure I caught a glimpse of poor dear Mr. Fine wherever I went. If so, I am glad he's had a bit of a holiday as well. He seemed a little fatigued when last we met. It was only when in possession of the last of the 6 postcards.
I'll be Adam, you be Eve. Know that you can count on me. No serpent's fang can us deceive when we reread carefully.
Then I saw the key. The first word of the first card, the second word of the second, and so on. If read in this way, what emerges is Rose, Garden, Regent's, Park, Midsummer's, Eve. It was a delightful evening. I scarcely noticed the rain, and there did seem to be rather a lot of small insects. Gnats, I think they were. I must apologize about your suit. Have you managed to get it dry cleaned? Did the stain come out? I can't imagine why my hand shook as I handed you the cup. I do hope our acquaintance may continue. Pauline.
Dear Pauline, many delights at returning home after a long voyage, but none quite to match the pleasure of meeting you at long last. I'm so pleased that you enjoyed our little game with the postcards. I wasn't at all sure if the message could be understood. The scheme did rather tax my rhyming skills to the limit. It's difficult for me to find words to express my feelings at the fact that you brought tea. But not just tea, anyhow, as I have had to become accustomed to it, but water just at the boil, a warmed pot, the brew properly steeped, and the milk first, just as it should be when made with real, honest-to-goodness tea leaves. Please don't trouble yourself about my suit at all. It was I who was clumsy. Truth to tell, I was more than a little nervous at our first meeting. Can't quite think why. So let us say it was a sudden gust of wind that spilled the cup. I must confess that I very seldom wore suits in the old days. I sought comfort first and elegance later, or perhaps not at all. It's only since I've grown to independent means that my dress sense has developed at all. I think it was Thoreau who said, "Beware of all ventures that require new clothes." Maybe I should learn from that. But I'm rambling. It is my hope, too, that our acquaintance, may I say, friendship, continues. But tea by all means. I believe in common with all right-thinking people that all things end and begin in tea. Contentedly. Affectionately. Julius.
In Venture Capital, Episode 3 of Capital Gains by Colin Johnson, Peter Jones was Julius Hutch, Celestine Randall, Mrs. Pauline Tone, Peter Whitman, Peter Fang, Geoffrey Wickham, Sexton Lewis, Justine Midder, Kate, and Colin Johnson, the newsreader. Capital Gains is directed by Andy Jordan.